and the business of tending them rotated among the troopers, who, in many cases, had only joined up to get away from the clan farm. With her supply line secure, Swiftkiller organized the assault on the East Pole Mountains. Swiftkiller, Cliff Watcher, and North Wind would lead the climb, but backing them would be over half the troop. Swiftkiller worked carefully, orchestrating the climb like a major battle. Twice she backed down from a hard-won valley because the climb, although not difficult for an unburdened Sheila, would have been impossible for one loaded with food parcels. Slowly, the expedition worked its way into the foothills. Chunks of crust were stationed on the steeper slopes for rest stations, and soon two lanes of porters were moving back and forth from the fort on the lowlands to the point of the climb that slowly thrust its way inward and upward. "That was a terrible stretch," Cliff Watcher complained as he lay exhausted on the crust in one of the rare flat spots in the mountain pass. "The Glancer almost wouldn't fit through that narrow crevasse." Swiftkiller, her body bulging with the curved shape of the expander, ignored the complaint and announced, "This will be an ideal place for our next base camp. I will go ahead and reconnoiter, while you two work your way down to the lead parcel crew. Take your time and make sure that you secure the path for them." Swiftkiller carefully emptied her pouch of the expander and moved swiftly off as North Wind and Cliff Watcher wearily dropped their loads and moved back down the mountain. Swiftkiller was pleased. The way ahead was steep but broad. They would make good progress with their loads over this stretch. In her hurry to explore well ahead, she thinned her body down and pushed only a narrow path through the prickly crust. She would broaden it on her way back down, when the tremendous pull of Egg would help instead of hinder her motion. She came around a low ledge and then stared at the barrier ahead. "Bright's curse!" she exploded. Her eyes scanned the area, but there was no escape from the fact that the canyon they had been traveling had come to an abrupt end. There was a tall cliff blocking the way. She moved closer to it and began to examine the vertical cracks that rent the face in the easy direction. There were a lot of the cracks, for the crust had very little strength in the easy direction, and the pull of Egg was constantly attempting to draw the soaring cliffs to its bosom. This particular cliff must have been formed recently, for it had not been worn much by the ever-present winds. Swiftkiller searched along the base and then found a fairly large rent that went back a good way into the cliff. Conquering her fear of the cliff face towering over her, she moved up to the rent. Without looking up at the terrifying sight of that mass of rock ready to fall on her topside, she narrowed down and pushed her body into the crack. She soon filled the bottom of it completely. Then, still pushing with her tread and muscles on the outside, she forced her body fluids into the narrow crack. Slowly, her body became tall and narrow instead of its usual flattened ellipsoidal shape. Although the pull of Egg tried to drag her down, the narrow crevasse kept her from being flattened, and since the easy direction was upwards, it was not hard to move in that direction, while the hardness in the horizontal direction actually helped her to maintain her body in the crevasse. She pushed and pushed and felt the pressure build up in her lower body. When she felt she could stand the pressure no longer, she took a quick, terrified glance up the remainder of the crack and was disappointed to find that she had climbed only a small portion of the way to the top. Dismay and terror weakened her hold, and she felt herself falling down and out the bottom of the crevasse. The force of her fall caused her internal juices to form a small wave that actually rolled her outside sack of skin over and over. For the first time since she was a tiny hatchling blown about by the wind, she found herself tread upwards. Swiftkiller slowly righted her bruised body and moved away from the front of the cliff, while she thought. She went over to a mound of rubble and thoughtfully picked her way through the chunks of crust that lay tumbled there. She picked up several good-sized slabs that were thick plates. She went back to the crevasse with her burden, and turning one of the chunks endways, pushed it ahead of her into the crevasse. She again pushed her body into the crack and lifted the plate up as high as she could. She then turned the slab sideways and slowly let it come down, where the flat edges jammed against the narrowing sides of the crack as the pull of egg sat it firmly into place. Swiftkiller slowly relinquished her hold, and she watched in pleasure as the heavy chunk of crust stayed suspended between the walls of the crevasse, just over her normal eye height. She took another slab, a longer one this time, and soon it too was suspended against the pull of egg at the same height, but further out from the back of the notch. Swiftkiller looked her creation over with care, and then flowed back out of the crevasse, and slowly returned from the rubble pile with another thick slab of crust, longer than the others. With a great effort, she lifted the slab, and soon it was in place, resting on top of the other two. Swiftkiller hesitated, then slowly induced herself to glide under the improvised platform to the back of the crevasse. She again forced her body into the narrow crack, and, stretching out a narrow pseudopod that snaked up to rest on top of the wedged slabs, she slowly pumped her juices up against the pull of egg, so that they inflated that portion of her skin on the platform. She halted after she had several eyes transferred to the upper level, then formed some strong manipulators that grasped the top slab tightly. Then, firmly anchored, she finally pushed and pulled the rest of her body up onto the platform. All during this long procedure, Swiftkiller had been careful to keep all of her dozen eyes carefully concerned with watching the wall, the manipulators, the slabs, anything but the outside environment. Only when she was safely on top of the slab, her manipulators keeping her from flowing off the front or the back, and the firm walls of the crevasse holding her in from the sides, did she finally allow herself to observe the predicament she had put herself into. She looked out of the crevasse at the horizon, then at the pile of rubble in the distance, then at the crust just at the entrance to the crevasse, then just inside the entrance, and then her eyes refused to look any further. Try as she might, she just couldn't seem to make them look down from the platform where she hunched, perched at a height above the crust that would have burst her skin like a ripe pod if she had fallen. "It needs to be wider," Swiftkiller said to herself. "If we are going to use this as a platform to make another one further up. And perhaps they should be closer together, so it isn't as hard to flow up onto them. But it will work. We will just make floating platforms up the crevasse to the top of the cliff." Swiftkiller slowly let herself down, forming a few more massive manipulators to hold onto small ledges in the cliff walls to slow her descent. She quickly flowed out from beneath the platform and returned to the base camp, happily breasting her way down through the fuzzy crust. Conquering the cliff took many turns. Although some of the troopers soon became expert scalers, and even found a technique to get the awkward expander and glancer up the notch, almost one-third of the troopers were incapable of forcing themselves to climb up on the overhanging platforms. Despite the thinning out of her supply line, Swiftkiller pressed on. And as the double line of the expedition wound its way through the East Pole Mountains, it slowly became obvious to all that the atmosphere was getting thinner and the visibility was getting better. Far to the north, they could see a swirling cloud of smoke that came southward from the large volcano in the northern hemisphere and, turning at the East Pole, made its way out to the west along the equator. However, the dense clouds didn't penetrate into the mountains. During a rest period, Cliff Watcher gazed up at the seven bright points of light.
"Perhaps we could try sending a message again," he said.
Swiftkiller had made up her own mind about that long ago.
"It is clearer," she said, "but we could still have a better chance of being seen if we were to go higher still, for the atmosphere is getting thinner rapidly as we go higher. We could attempt a message now, but we have only a limited supply of flares and pod juice, and I would rather wait to use them when we are as high as we can get."
The climb had taken over two greats of turns. Even Swiftkiller was surprised when she realized that she would soon have a second egg mature inside her, to be sent back down with one of the plodding porters that moved back and forth between base camps, shuttling food up the living chain. Finally, the supply line had been stretched to its limit. There was no limit to the food supply at the base of the mountains, for the fort had turned into a prosperous town, complete with egg pens, hatchling schools, farms, and small businesses set up on the side by enterprising troopers. The hunting parties and harvesters kept a steady stream of food pouring into the base of the pyramid, but most of it went into supplying the daily needs of the porters, who used the energy to haul supplies up the mountain against the great pull of egg. Swiftkiller finally called a halt at a flat place in the mountains.
"We will stop here," she said to Cliff Watcher and North Wind. "I want you both to rest and eat well to build up your reserves while the porter crews build up our supplies. I will scout ahead and see if there is another place equally as good ahead of us. If there is, we will move on to it to send our message. Otherwise, we will attempt it from here."
Swiftkiller emptied out her pouches, especially the bulky glancer she had been carrying, and moved steadily on up the canyon. She was gone for so many turns that Cliff Watcher and North Wind began to get worried. But finally, she returned with good news.
"There is another wide, level place further up the mountain," she said. "It will be a long climb carrying the equipment, but there are no tricky traverses or steep cliffs, just a long upward trip."
She glanced at the nervously twitching eye stubs of her two compatriots. She could tell that they were thinking about objecting to a continuation of the climb, since the messages could be sent almost as well from their present spot. She decided to reassert her authority.
"At alert!"
boomed the tread of Troop Commander Swiftkiller, only slightly muffled by the fuzzy crust. Although Cliff Watcher was not a trooper, he had been living with a troop for so long that he found his body imitating the instant response of North Wind as the commander's rigid eyes glared at them.
"The sole purpose of this entire expedition is to send a message to the beings in the inner eye," Swiftkiller began, "and I intend to do that to the best of my ability, and yours. This camp is not the best place to send that message, so we will go on. Do you understand?"
"Yes, Commander,"
boomed North Wind's formal reply, echoed by Cliff Watcher's odd response.
"Good," she said. "From now on, I want you two to obey my orders."
Her body relaxed slightly, and she continued.
"We three will push on in a dozen turns,
after we all have had time to rest, build up our internal food reserves, and have a good supply of food parcels. Now for my orders. My first order is to rest. My second order is to eat well. And my third order is to thin out, because I have just returned from a long, lonely journey, and I am going to take you both on at once." With that, she moved in between them, and shortly was enjoying being the middle layer of a triple-layer orgy. After 12 turns of rest and recreation, Swiftkiller was anxious to be on her way. Since they had to have other things to occupy their time besides eating and sex, she had Cliffwatcher learn the finer points of short-sword infighting from North Wind, while she refereed. Then, both she and North Wind learned to make counter-tendrils, and soon both could compute almost as fast as Cliffwatcher. They were now ready to go. She had convinced North Wind that there was very little likelihood of meeting barbarians in the mountains at these heights, so they left their weapons. They loaded up with the all-important message equipment and as much food as they could carry, and the three set off up the mountain. The rest of the troop was left with orders to set up food caches at the various base camps down the mountain and to withdraw to the fort. The climb was difficult, but as Swiftkiller had assured them, there was nothing particularly tricky about it. Because of their bulky burdens, however, it took them much longer to make the climb than it had taken Swiftkiller in her exploration climb. They ate their food rapidly as their bodies labored under the pull of egg. "I always felt that I would rather carry the food in my juices than in my pouches," North Wind said as he ate a pod. "It may all weigh the same, but somehow when it is inside me, I feel it is at least carrying its share of the load."
"I will be glad to relieve you of any food you don't want to carry any longer," Cliffwatcher said.
"Sorry," North Wind said, carefully sucking the last drop of juice from a pod skin as he pulled it from his eating pouch. "Last one." "Oh, well," Cliffwatcher said, as North Wind cracked open each pod seed with a tiny, hard manipulator and carefully ate the little kernel inside. "Guess we might as well be on our way." He turned his attention to Swiftkiller, who was busy calculating something.
"That will work out just about right," she said. "We are about 2 turns from our destination. We will be out of food by then, but our body reserves will last long enough for us to send up the messages and get back to the base camp with plenty to spare, although we will be hungry most of the way back down."
"I'm hungry right now," Cliffwatcher said, "and I finished all my food last turn."
"That is what the troopers call fat hunger," North Wind said. "When you think you are hungry just because you are used to eating every turn. You can't eat every turn when you are a trooper pursuing barbarians. Wait 12 turns. Then you will know what being hungry really means."
"I am not looking forward to it," Cliffwatcher said, as he led the way up the canyon.
At last they came over a rise and entered the wide, level region that Swiftkiller had found. With a sigh of relief, they unloaded the message equipment and spread out on the fuzzy crust for a rest.
"I sure could use some food right now," Cliffwatcher said. "Even an unripe pod would taste good."
"You would never make a trooper," North Wind retorted. "I haven't been hungry since we left the last base camp."
"It is all just a matter of proper attitude. Look at me. I am not even hungry for a pod, much less an unripe one."
"Well, that's too bad," Swiftkiller remarked. "I just happened to have saved out 3 ripe pods. But since North Wind isn't hungry, and Cliffwatcher seems to pine for unripe pods, I guess I will just have to eat them myself."
At these words, the two males swarmed over her, prodding her all over until they found the pouch that held the three pods. Despite her protests that this was no way to treat a troop commander, North Wind held her down while Cliffwatcher carefully kneaded the pouch open and extracted three slightly bruised pods. They all then relaxed, eating their last meal for some time, as they stared up at the tiny light hanging in the sky, with its ring of six bright lights slowly circling about it. Soon, the three were busy setting up the beaming apparatus. The flat glancer mirror was propped up at an angle against a nearby cliff, and the curved expander was placed a slight distance away. Swiftkiller organized them into a smoothly working team. North Wind held up the flares and kept them placed as close as possible to the point in space that Swiftkiller and Cliffwatcher had decided upon. Cliffwatcher used his finest tendrils to manipulate the flow valve on the holder for the pod juice, while Swiftkiller constantly checked the alignments of the various portions of the apparatus and at the same time rhythmically read off the calls from the tally string that she held at her side.
Longburn, flick, 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 dash, flick,
Swiftkiller droned slowly as Cliffwatcher concentrated on turning the valve of the vial of pod juice, and North Wind held the flare carefully at the correct position. The message was very boring, since it was just a picture with a lot of blank space. But both North Wind and Cliffwatcher had participated in previous attempts to beam a message up to Inner Eye, and knew what they were getting into. The many short flashes representing spaces were just as important as the dashes representing points or the long burns that signify the beginning of a line. A few omitted flashes could badly distort the picture and the message they were trying to send. Swiftkiller had decided long ago that accuracy was more important than speed, even constant speed. After all, the strange beings in the Inner Eye certainly took their time in sending down their pictures, almost as if they were too slow-witted to cope with anything faster. They slowly ground through the first picture message. Swiftkiller called a halt to see if there was any darkening of the dark detector, indicating that there was a message coming back to them in return.
Nothing,
Swiftkiller said, as she lifted the small vial of fluid and peered through it. Contact. Time, 7:58 and 24.2 seconds GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. The wide-angle X-ray ultraviolet scanner on Dragonslayer detected a moderately strong pulsed emission in the East Pole Mountains. It had not been there when that same area had been scanned a few seconds ago. Automatic feature extractors singled out the region, and a search and identify priority was assigned to the narrow-angle scanner, which locked onto the blinking light source in a millisecond and began to record and analyze the pulses in detail. An occasional pulse of high-temperature thermal radiation at the East Pole was not unexpected. Fairly often, a chunk of meteoric material would be pulled in by the star's gravity, and as it would approach the star, the extreme gravitational and magnetic fields of the star would rip the rock apart and transform it into a blob of ionized plasma. The hot gas would fall at near relativistic speeds down along the magnetic field lines to impact on the surface in a brilliant explosion of heat and light. However, these pulses coming from the star were not the fiery blasts from infalling meteors. The regularity of the pulsations triggered a higher priority circuit that kept the narrow-angle scanner on the pulsations until they quit several milliseconds later. Low-level judgment circuits evaluated the significance of the periodicity and assigned it a moderately high priority. The narrow-angle scanner would return to that site often in its constantly varying scanning routine. But there was nothing there of interest to the humans. Time, 7:58 and 24.3 seconds, GMT. Monday, 20 June, 2050.
"Let's try again,"
Swiftkiller said. Keeping the dark detector in front of one of her eyes, she went back to the apparatus. This time she held the valve herself with a set of manipulators, while a set of tendrils felt off the knots and the tally string. Much later, Swiftkiller called a halt. The second message had been beamed up to the inner eye, and still there was no response.
"If only we could be sure that our weak light could be seen at that distance,"
Swiftkiller complained bitterly. "You could climb to the top of that peak over there," Northwind said with mild sarcasm. "Cliff Watcher and I will be glad to beam a message up to you, and you could check on the reception."
For once, Swiftkiller was silent. She could think of nothing else to do but to try again. They were nearing the end of the third message when a loud crash came vibrating through the crust. Swiftkiller didn't move. The highly developed sonic direction-finding apparatus in her tread had told her exactly what had happened.
"The Glancer has fallen," she said.
Her eyes, which had been concentrating on the work of monitoring the fall of the drops of pod juice onto the end of the flare, continued their gaze, while Swiftkiller slowly turned the valve off, closing it tightly to prevent leaks. She pouched the vial, and then finally turned her attention to the base of the nearby cliff, where the glittering shards of the broken Glancer lay in a shattered heap. Swiftkiller flowed over to the base of the cliff, forming a manipulator as she went. She felt through the sparkling pieces, but found none that were anywhere near the size of the original mirror. "At least we got some of the messages off," Cliff Watcher said consolingly.
"Yes, but there are still more, and we ought to repeat them as often as we can to make sure they are received," Swiftkiller said. "We must find a way to keep sending without using the Glancer."
"Perhaps we can find a suitable chunk of crust around here," Northwind suggested.
"I'm afraid not," Swiftkiller said. "I have been looking at the various types of crust as we passed by different formations, and all the material in these mountains seems to consist of fuzzy crust. I have not seen anything around here that had anywhere near as shiny a cleavage surface as a Glancer. We will have to think of something else."
Swiftkiller tried many things. However, there was no way that she could get a beam formed and directed upwards to the inner eye. She had even tried leaning the expander up against the cliff at an angle, being careful this time to back it up with chunks of crust. But the light from the flare came in at such an angle that the light reflected from the expander was sprayed out in a distorted beam that rapidly dissipated into the sky. She knew where the focus spot of the expander was, but it was an unreachable point way up in the sky, at least a dozen times higher than she could reach, and almost as high as the cliff itself. Then she had an idea.
"If we put the expander flat on the crust, pointing it up at the eyes," she said, "then the focus spot will be up around the top of this cliff. If we climbed up there with the flares, we could make the light near the focus, and the beam from the expander would go straight up to the eyes."
Being a trooper, North Wind said nothing. But Cliff Watcher exploded.
"You can't be serious! That cliff must be twice as high as you are wide. It will take you a dozen turns to climb that high, even if you can find a route. And we are out of food. We will be nothing but bags of skin if we ever make it." You are not going, Swiftkiller said. You will stay here. I will need to have you move the expander to different positions along the face of the cliff, until we get the focus spot so it is just above the edge of the cliff where we can reach it.
Swiftkiller went to the broken glancer, picked up one of the larger shards, and pouched it.
Let's go, Northwind, she said,
and took off toward the far end of the cliff, with the obedient trooper close on the tread of his commander. Time, 7:58 and 24.4 seconds GMT. Monday, 20 June, 2050.
A fraction of a second later, the pulsed emission started again. And this time, the narrow-angle scanner cut it early in its emission period. The semi-automatic search and identify circuits kept the scanner focused on the pulsations, while the feature extractor and the frequency analysis circuits activated a correlation program. A strong match was then found between the pulsation pattern of the emissions and the rectangular picture pattern that Abdul had chosen in his attempts at communication with Dragon's Egg. If the computer had been a human, its eyebrows would have raised. The new correlation was enough to trigger an action circuit. As a result, a millisecond later, humans were called into the loop.
Periodic XUV emission, East Pole.
Seiko glanced up at the computer message across the top of her screen. She was floating too far away from the console to reach any of the keys, so she used audibles, even if they were slower.
Display,
she commanded.
And instantly, a replay of the narrow-angle X-ray ultraviolet scanner was on her screen. She watched the regular blinking of the spot in the middle of the East Pole Mountains, then glanced up to see that the computer had slowed it down considerably for her.
1/100,000th real time.
Seiko watched it for a few seconds. The pulsations stopped abruptly. There seemed to be no sense to them.
Analysis, she commanded.
The picture on the screen stayed, while the computer overprinted result after result of its analysis.
Position, 0.1 degree west longitude, 2.0 degree north latitude. Spectrum modified thermal, 15,000 degrees Kelvin. Modulation similar to Dragon's Egg comm picture. No identifiable natural source.
Seiko scanned down the list and stiffened in shock. She expertly twisted her body in a mid-air position reversal maneuver, caught hold of the edge of the console, and pulled herself up to it. Her fingers flew over keys. Within a few seconds, Swiftkiller's second message was building up on her screen.
Abdul!
She called to the next console, where Abdul and Komi Farouk was laboriously working out a new message.
They are answering!
Time, 7:58 and 28 seconds, GMT. Monday, 20 June, 2050. Cliff Watcher had been right. The path that finally took them to the top of the cliff was torturous and hard. Both Swiftkiller and Northwind were hungry long before they reached the top, and this time it was the real hunger of someone who had been working at hard labor for a dozen turns. Swiftkiller still had plenty of reserves, but she was beginning to worry about Northwind, for he was not as robust as she was. However, being a trooper, he never complained. As Swiftkiller approached the edge of the cliff, she pulled the glancer's shard from a pouch.
I'm sure I could never get one of my eyes to look down over the edge to see where Cliffwatcher is. But as long as it thinks it is looking out at the horizon, I shouldn't have any trouble, she explained to North Wind.
Forming a strong manipulator with a deep root embedded in her tread muscles, she extended the shard out over the edge of the cliff. She clustered her eyes in a line. With a little adjustment, she could see the deep red top of Cliff Watcher, waiting patiently next to the expander.
I must really be getting hungry, Swiftkiller thought. Here I am gazing full on the top side of a handsome young male, and I am not even interested.
Swiftkiller turned to Northwind and said,
We will have to move down this way.
She led the way down the cliff until they were at the point above the waiting Cliff Watcher. Cliff Watcher had never thought that his hatchling name had amounted to much. And now here he was spending what seemed to be his last dozen turns on egg, doing nothing but watching a cliff. Swiftkiller tried both long talk and short talk, and soon found that there was no trouble in communicating with Cliff Watcher, if he just kept a portion of his tread leaning up against the face of the cliff. Cliff Watcher had already arranged the expander. It was as close to the base of the cliff as he could get it. North Wind formed a heavy manipulator like that of Swiftkiller, and slowly stretched it out over the edge, a small flare held at the end. Swiftkiller removed one of the vials of pod juice from a pouch, and, gripping it carefully, extended that, too. She constantly reminded herself to hold tightly to the vial. If it fell, the expander would be shattered in as many shreds as the glancer. Slowly, she formed a muscular pseudopod that slithered out on top of the heavy manipulator. The fine tip of the pseudopod curled its way around the valve. The valve slowly turned, and a tiny stream of liquid hit the end of the flare. They both flinched from the unaccustomed blue-white light, but soon a steady beam shot forth into the sky. Swiftkiller evaluated it carefully. Fortunately, the winds were high that turn, and there were many dust particles in the air. Swiftkiller could see the strong beam as it went upwards, only to come to a bright point at some unimaginable distance overhead. Swiftkiller turned off the valve, and they both slowly withdrew their manipulators back over the edge and relaxed.
We are too far away from the focus spot, Swiftkiller said. We will have to move down the cliff.
Northwind had never been able to figure out exactly what Swiftkiller and Cliff Watcher were talking about when they mentioned things like focus spots, but he decided to let Swiftkiller do the thinking. After all, she was the commander. He silently followed her along the edge of the cliff until they came to another convenient portion of the ledge where they could both get a good tread grip. Swiftkiller again stuck her little glancer over the edge and watched as Cliff Watcher pouched the expander, hauled it to the new position underneath Swiftkiller's waving manipulator, then repositioned it carefully on the crust and moved back. This time, when the light blazed from the top of the cliff, the beam that came out from the expander did not refocus. Swiftkiller thought that it was still slightly converging as she lost sight of it high in the sky, but it was good enough.
We will continue our message, she said as she pulled the tally strings from a pouch.
Northwind shuffled the crust in resignation, retracted the short flare they had been using for testing purposes, and replaced it with a longer one. At least I won't have to climb for a while, he said tiredly to himself, and settled down to hold the heavy manipulator as still as he possibly could. Soon, a disciplined pulsation of light was beaming its way up to the eyes, continuing the message that had been interrupted a dozen turns ago when the glancer had fallen from the face of the cliff. Swiftkiller did not pause long when she came to the end. Since they were on their body reserves, it didn't help much to rest anymore. Except for an occasional change of flare or pod juice vial, the two troopers doggedly kept at their task. Their job finally finished, Swiftkiller and Northwind started their way back down the path to the base of the cliff. By mutual consent, they left everything but their clan totems in a pile at the top of the cliff. A dozen turns later, a weary cliff watcher saw two very thin Sheela slowly making their way around the end of the cliff. Swiftkiller was in front, breaking a path for the exhausted trooper.
"Another tread length,"
she would urge, and gently nudge the sides of his treads with her trailing edge to keep him rippling. Slowly, the two came up to Cliffwatcher.
"I cannot go any further," North Wind said. "Leave me here."
"No," said Swiftkiller. "We are all going together."
She turned her attention to Cliffwatcher.
"I know you were tired, too. But we must get to the base camp where there is a cache of food waiting. You get behind North Wind and keep him moving, while I break path."
Cliffwatcher was too tired to argue and moved in behind his friend North Wind. Together, the three began to move off and down the sloping valley. Cliffwatcher, who had been checking the dark detector periodically, had just repouched it after looking to see if there had been any reply to their hard-sent messages. There was nothing. He turned some of his eyes up to the specks of light above him and wondered at their silence. As he looked, a rapidly falling streak of bright light appeared to the side of the eyes, high in the sky. The falling object became elongated and grew brighter and brighter. Cliffwatcher stirred, and the other two raised their eyes, then tried to draw them under their protective flaps. There was no time. In an instant, the whole sky was aflame with an explosion of light and heat that seared their topsides and left three skinny blobs of scorched, blinded flesh that wriggled away from each other in their attempts to escape the pain. Swiftkiller had never hurt so. Her last thought was that Bright had decided to punish her for having the temerity to attempt to talk to God. The automatic protective mechanisms in her body, activated by the lack of body reserves and the shock from the topside burns, suddenly took over. The animal reflexes were turned off, and for the first time in untold generations, a Sheela went to sleep. Time, 7:58 and 37 seconds, GMT. Monday, 20 June, 2050. Abdul came flying over to Seiko's console. He halted his headlong dive with a practiced swing around one of the support stanchions and hung motionless just over Seiko's head.
"What reply?" he said.
"There is someone down there who is sending back pictures with the same format that you used," Seiko replied. "But they are coming from the East Pole. They use thermal ultraviolet radiation instead of laser light, and they are coming very fast. Look, here is the first picture."
"It is a picture of Dragonslayer and the six tidal compensators above Dragon's Egg," Abdul said. "But the star seems to be badly distorted into the shape of a pancake. It must be their star, however, because they have drawn in the mound formation. But what is that long, narrow wedge with its base near us and its point over the formation?"
"It is a pointer," Seiko said. "If you look at the second and third pictures, you will see that they are almost identical, except that the position of our ship slowly shifts toward the west, while the wedge symbol gets shorter."
Seiko's fingers flew over the keyboard, and soon the first picture was joined by a second and a portion of a third.
"You are right," Abdul said. "It looks as if they want us to move to a position over their formation. I know why, too. The visibility through the atmosphere is poor in that direction. It would be much better if we were directly overhead."
Abdul suddenly realized something else that Seiko had said.
How fast was the message being sent? He asked.
The computer had to slow it down, Seiko said. I estimate the pulse every 4 microseconds.
Abdul went back to his console, and soon had a trace of the pulses from the first picture lined up on the screen. He leaned forward and looked more closely at the interval between pulses.
They are very irregular in spacing and amplitude, he said, almost as if they were handmade. You would think that a being that could make an ultraviolet laser could make a decent modulator.
The radiation is from a thermal source, Seiko reported.
Abdul paused as her reply sank in.
They are signaling to us with a neutron star equivalent of American Indian smoke signals, he said. And each one of those crude pulses is made in 4 microseconds.
Great Allah!
That means that those beings must live something like 1,000,000 times faster than we do. And I have been sending the laser pulses at a rate of about 1 per second. To them, that is like 1,000,000 seconds between pulses.
Seiko quickly did the calculation for him.
As if it were about 1 week between pulses.
Abdul had another horrible thought.
How long has it been since they started to reply? He asked.
Seiko's hands flicked on the keyboard, and the first picture reappeared with a time of reception in the upper corner.
The first picture arrived almost 1 minute ago, she replied. And if the ratio is 1,000,000 to 1, that is like 2 years ago.
They have probably gotten tired of waiting for an answer and have gone home, Abdul said. We had better get busy, and fast.
He hesitated a second, then lifted the cover on a panel on the side of the console and flicked the emergency alarm switch.
You explain the situation to Pierre and the others, he said over the whoop of the alarm signal, and get Pierre to stop moving the Dragon Slayer over the mound formation. I will try to get some sort of reply back as fast as I can.
Seiko fixed up her screen with all the pictures displayed, so she would be ready when the rest of the crew came boiling into the main deck to see what the emergency was. Within a few seconds, Abdul had swiveled the laser radar to illuminate the east pole directly below them, while its operational frequency had been pushed up to the short ultraviolet. Because he had nothing better immediately at hand, Abdul had the computer play back the pictures that had been sent up from the surface. While they were pulsing down at 1 megahertz rate, he quickly pulled in the first picture that he had beamed down, showing the Dragon Slayer and the 6 tidal compensators above Dragon's Egg. He added an arrow that curved over to a position above the mound formations, and had the computers send that back down to the east pole. He then swiveled the laser back toward the strange star-like formation, and had it repeat the message twice, alternating between ultraviolet and light output. Since they had seen his first messages, they should be able to detect it one way or the other. This time, Abdul hoped that nobody would die of boredom, waiting for the next pulse.
Time, 7:58:40 GMT. Monday, 20 June, 2050. The nearly empty seared sacks lay on the crust, quietly sleeping. Ancient planchines, activated by the almost complete lack of food reserves, began their strange work. The animal enzymes were neutralized, and new enzymes were generated that attacked the very muscles that supported the skin, turning the striated flesh into a floating cloud of long fibers. The skin itself was thinned until it was almost transparent. Other plant enzymes took over and used the liquid material and long fibers to fashion large, super-strength crystals. This was not the brittle crystallium that the animal body had previously used for manipulators. This was dragon crystal. At the center of the now flaccid tread, a tendril forced its way into the crust, In its core was a sharp cone of crystal, exuding acids that ate their way into the crust. The spike slowly penetrated deeper and deeper into the hot, neutron-rich crust. Hair-like threads spread out between the crustal fibers, and nutrients began to flow in from the threads and up the taproot. Meanwhile, smaller spikes of crystal, thick at the base and finely rounded at the tip, began to form in a star-like pattern at the head of the taproot. The strong dragon crystal structure overcame the frightful pull of egg and jutted out at a low angle to the surface. The dozen spikes spread out like a thorny crown. They grew longer and longer, and the flaccid skin, long since cured of its burns, was lifted up into the air. As the spikes grew longer, even their great crystalline strength was no longer adequate to resist egg's pull. So strong tension fibers formed that went from attachment knobs just below the growing tip of each spike to a stubby post that stuck up from the base of the spikes. Slowly, the 12-spiked cantilever canopy raised itself off the crust until the skin was drawn tightly to it. The topside portion of the skin, hanging in a smooth, dark red concave arc between the ends of the spikes, found that its shape shielded it from the glowing yellow surface crust, and it stared straight up into the cold sky. With its spike buried deep in the hot, neutron-rich crust, and its thinned upper surface area well coupled to a cold heat sink, the heat engine plant that used to be Swiftkiller began to make food. It was oblivious to the fact that nearby were two other dragon plants, the first crop since before recorded Shela history. For many, many turns, the dragon plants grew and prospered. They were massive and slow-growing, and had to replace a lot of food reserves, so they took their time. After waiting in vain for the three climbers to return, the troop was finally taken over by the senior squad leader, who mustered out those who wanted to stay in this bright, forsaken region and moved the remainder of the troop back to the borders of Bright's empire, where he then had the unpleasant duty of reporting the deaths of Swiftkiller, Northwind, and Cliffwatcher to their clans. Time went on, and Bright's empire grew and expanded its borders. Since the ford of Swift's Climb existed, it was easy for the border to expand all the way to the foothills of the East Pole Mountains. However, no one really liked to climb unless they had to, especially in the hard direction, so there were no visitors in the mountain paths, and the dragon plants grew undisturbed. One turn, there was a sharp quake, as the massive overburden that the East Pole Mountains put upon Egg readjusted itself. A poorly formed joint in one of the three dragon plants failed. The spike fell instantly in the strong pull of Egg, tearing the skin and dumping the vital fluids onto the surface. For a while, the dragon plants struggled to survive, but finally it gave up. After a dozen turns, there was nothing left but shiny spikes of dragon crystal, a few shreds of dried skin, a clan totem, and the double button of a squad leader. For a long while, nothing happened. Then the dragon crystal spikes sparkled as a slowly pulsating beam of pure blue light shone down from the tiny center speck of the 7 points of light in the sky. The pulsations went on for some time, bathing the mountains in a blue glow, but there were no eyes to see them. They finally stopped. Time continued on. The barbarians were driven further and further from Bright's empire and grew smaller in number. The large volcano in the north became more active, and billows of smoke crowded against the east pole. The unbalance in the heat radiated from the star into the dark skies became so great that huge windstorms grew and were strong enough occasionally to push smoke into the East Pole region. The sky grew cloudy. The bottoms of the smoky clouds turned yellow with the heat reflected from the glowing surface. The heat engine that ran between the taproot and the crust and the skyward-facing concave dish of skin and the dragon plants began to fail. With food reserves high and growing efficiencies low, the plant-forming genes began to lose their potency, and other enzyme mechanisms were triggered. Slowly, the dragon crystal was dissolved to reappear as firm muscle under a thick skin. The little photosensitive bud caps at the tips of the crystal spikes reformed their flaps, and new little eyes, still dormant, grew under those flaps. Swiftkiller woke up. She felt very strange, as if she had not moved a muscle in a long time. Fortunately, she was feeling no pain from her burned topside and eyes.
"My eyes! I cannot see! How will I ever get down out of these mountains without eyes?"
She then realized that she had all of her eyes tucked tightly underneath their flaps. She cautiously pushed out one after the other.
"I can see light," she said, "but everything is all blurry."
She tried to form a pseudopod to wipe off her eyes and found that she was as weak and clumsy as a hatchling. She soon had the fluid wiped off her eyes, but it was a full turn before she could really see clearly. She knew that she must have been badly hurt by the blast of fire from the sky, but now she felt perfectly fine, except for her muscular weakness, her clumsy coordination, and blurred vision. What amazed her was that she was no longer hungry. Being a good troop commander, her first thought had been for her troopers, and she had looked around for Northwind and Cliffwatcher, but could not see them. She was too weak to travel, so she concentrated on exercises until she felt ready to cope with the hazards of downhill travel in the vicious pull of Egg. After a turn, she felt much better and started to examine her surroundings. As far as she could remember, she was still in the same valley where they had been when the flame struck, but she had not remembered the giant plant to one side, or the fabulous collection of dragon crystal lying on the crust on the other side. She might have ignored a plant, even if it were as big around as herself, but she would never have ignored a veritable treasure of shining dragon crystal. At the very least, she would have marked the spot and arranged to have a crew climb back up to retrieve it. She went over to the glittering spikes and picked them up, one after the other.
"Strange," she thought to herself. "These are amazingly shiny, as if they were brand new or fresh cast. All the natural dragon crystals are weathered by the constant scrubbing of wind-blown dust."
She picked up another spike that had a shred of something sticking to it. She pulled the shred off the spike and suddenly dropped it in a horrified reflex action.
"Northwind!"
she whispered in horror. Her eyes tripped.